Brisbane, Australia, Adam Devlin on iTunes International.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry on Bondi Beach in Sydney, Australia, and I'm joined by our Australian political correspondent. Lord Adam Devlin is in Brisbane, Queensland. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Henry. Hello, listeners.
And it's good to know that, well, it's important to note that you are actually a lord.
I am a Scottish lord, yes. So a little respect would be nice, thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to be King Henry VIII, but
It would have been dumb.
If I was King Henry VIII in this day and age, I think I'd be in jail.
Yeah.
Beheading all those women.
All those beheadings.
Now, Adam, our previous Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, who the right-wing media in Australia are saying led us through the pandemic, more like he dragged us through the pandemic, has been sitting on the back benches of Parliament for the last couple of years. He was our Prime Minister for the right-wing Liberal Party between 2018 and 2022. And he went on holidays when Australia was burning with bushfires and gave himself five portfolios and said it was because of the pandemic, has now resigned from Parliament. And I just spoke to a friend of mine in South Australia who said that's because he couldn't find a job, unlike every other Prime Minister who could.
Pretty much. He's sourced a new role with a right-wing think tank in America. So he'll be working a lot out of America. And to be quite honest, considering what's happening in America at the moment, I can't think of a better place for him.
Yes, he deserves what he gets.
No, anywhere other than Australia is good. So,
what exactly did he do on the backbenches in the last couple of years?
I've got a list here, a bullet point list of the things that he's achieved.
Yeah, please do.
So if you've got a minute, I'll just run through it.
Yes, please
do. I won't take long.
Yep.
All right, here goes. There it was.
Yeah, amazing, amazing how productive you can be on the back bench.
Yeah. In fact, the list is very similar to what he achieved as Prime Minister.
Indeed, but you've got to also include the damage report, because he did a lot of damage in his time in Parliament Prime Minister.
You know, just a very brief summary, and this is by no means an exhaustive list, but and this is just off the top of my head.
Yes,
you know, we've got you know, him and his wife and family going to Hawaii as Australia was suffering one of its worst ever national bushfires. Mm-hmm. Pretty much the entire country of Australia was on fire.
Yes, yes.
And he just decided that was the perfect time to take his kids off for a holiday to Hawaii. And of course, that in itself, you know, you've sort of got to have a little bit of sympathy for, you know, he's a father of young children, it was school holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So on that level, it was the perfect time to take them on a holiday, except for the fact that he's leading the country, which is in the middle of a huge national disaster, one of our worst in history.
Yes.
And let's not forget that he lied about going.
Did he lie by deception? Like, did he just not say he was going, or what happened there?
Yeah, he never said that he was leaving the country. He never said he was taking holidays. He just seemed to vanish. When his office was asked where he was, they lied about him being overseas. And it wasn't until a tourist who had a photograph taken of him at Hawaii,
yes,
posted that photograph on social media. And then all of a sudden the media just sort of went back to his office and went, can you please, if he's in the country, can you please explain A, why nobody can contact him, and B, how he's in this photograph in Hawaii?
That's amazing.
And so he then had to come out and say, oh yes, unfortunately I am overseas, and I'm getting the first flight back I can, and that's in a couple of days' time, which, of course, just, you know, another lie upon another lie upon another lie.
Yeah.
There were flights coming out of Hawaii every day. He could have left Hawaii almost instantly if he wanted to.
Yeah. He just wanted to make the most of that holiday, yeah.
Then he came back and decided that he'd try and, gain some political weight out of this, and so he went down to a coastal sea town, coastal seaside village called Cobargo, which is near where I grew up. The town had been completely destroyed by fire. And so he turned up with a camera crew and nothing else, and did a meet and greet with some people. Now, there were a couple of images from that visit that are burned into my memory, and I think they burned into the nationalist conscience. One, of course, was he walked up to this exhausted, tired old man who was a volunteer bushfire who had been fighting fires for days, and he was sitting down in a shed trying to catch his breath, trying to draw breath in the heat that was there. And Morrison walks up to him, grabs his hand and starts shaking his hand and says, you know, thank you. And the guy said, I don't want to shake your hand. And Morrison grabbed his both of his hands around this guy's hand and was forcing him to shake hands with him as the guy pulled his arm away, you know, live on TV. He walked out of the shed and walked up to a young woman and started talking to her. And she was pregnant. She had just lost her home in the fire. She was homeless and 9 months pregnant. And she asked him two or three very simple questions about what aid and assistance he was going to give her and the people of Cobargo. He couldn't answer the question. And when she pushed him on that, on an answer, he simply turned his back and walked away on her.
Unbelievable arrogance.
Yeah, again, did this on national TV. Now, let's not also forget the portfolios he assigned himself, the ministerships he
assigned himself. I think it was five of them or something?
I think there were five of them, and he didn't tell the sitting ministers that he had, you know, elevated himself to co-minister for those ministries. So, you know, breaking with the Westminster traditions. Let's also not forget that when the AUKUS submarine deal was done and we cancelled and walked away on a multi-billion dollar deal with the French government to buy submarines from France, that and when Macron, the French president, called Morrison out on this, Morrison then leaked some private text messages from the French president to the Australian Prime Minister to the media in a childish and pathetic attempt to try and save his own face, which of course backfired spectacularly on him.
Of course it did, yeah. Okay.
And then there's all the ministerial scandals. He lost numerous ministers because of financial scandal. And somehow he still seems to think through all of that the Australian people think of him as in fondly.
it is very disturbing to watch Channel 10 News saying how well he led us through the pandemic. Come on. I mean, really?
One more thing I don't want us to ever be able to forget was that he did his level best to take Brian Houston, the leader of Hillsong Church, to the White House. A church who is now discredited time and again over child sexual abuse claims.
Yes, the father of the guy who's running the church was a child abuser, child abuser, yeah.
And his son, who's now running the church, refused to report that to the police. So
he has since apologised for that, though, hasn't he? Or has he? I don't know.
He has apologised, but, you know, empty words. Bondi Tunes International. From the golden sands
of Bondi Beach, across your world. We are going to talk about Australia Day. It's a very contentious issue. But first of all, I just want to mention the cyclone. Cyclone Kerlee is in Townsville, which is a couple of 100 k's north of Brisbane, probably more than a couple of 100 k's, is expected to hit in 48 hours from now as we record, and go south to Bundaberg. It will be a category 3. Adam, you're in Brisbane. Do you guys need to be nervous, or what kind of weather will you get in Brisbane?
Well, last week's cyclone, and there literally was one last week.
Right. Well, really? I didn't know.
It might have been two weeks ago.
Yeah.
There was a cyclone in the same area, and we got torrential rain for a number of days out of that. We got very strong winds. We had a lot of people lose power here in Brisbane due to it. Now, they're expecting more than a metre's worth of rain to come out of this cyclone.
Yeah.
Which will fall pretty much in 24 hours. Now, where this is, they've had so much rain in the last few months because of tropical storms and cyclones and such, that the ground is completely sodden. It will not absorb any more water. So this metre or more of rain that's going to fall in North Queensland, it's just going to flow down the state of Queensland and into New South Wales, creating floods and havoc right along the way, everywhere it goes. So now, we will here in Brisbane, we will get heavy rains, we will get heavy winds. Of course, nothing like the people in closer to the cyclone. But these weather storms, these tropical storms, are just getting bigger and bigger every year, every season. They're not necessarily getting stronger, but the size of it, the diameter of the cyclone, is getting bigger. So although it's a similar, like a level three cyclone is not that uncommon for parts of Australia, parts of Northern Australia, it's a severe storm, don't get me wrong, and people will die in this. There will be massive, infrastructure damage, and houses will be destroyed and such. But it's not like a big, like it's not a level five cyclone. But, I know what we got here, so I can't imagine what the poor people who live in its direct...
Oh, it's dreadful. And it's dreadful for food production, the poor farmers, as if they're not being hammered already by the big supermarkets who are, price gouging us people. And the farmers, they're not paying them enough, and now they got this.
Not only will we lose a lot of crops, but we'll also lose a lot of farm animals as well.
That's a very good point,
And so, there'll be a lot of dead sheep, there'll be a lot of dead beef, there'll be a lot of dead pigs out of all of this.
You don't hear a lot about that in the news, like the actual animal death rate must skyrocket.
It does, but it doesn't rate, so it's not...
It doesn't rate.
We don't want to know that...
We just don't want to talk about
that. We don't want to know that the animals that we were going to have killed so that we could eat them, we don't want to know that they had a horrible death because of this cyclone.
And plates might be empty for dinner.
Yeah. Well, certainly costs will go up in the supermarket. The price of everything will go up again because of this storm, particularly here in Queensland, but it does have a national impact.
Of course, yeah.
And the thing is, Henry, this may not be the last one for the season.
Yes, well,
These storms can keep rolling through until around March. So, the season has already been... We've already had more storms this season than previously.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that most of the people who respond to these disasters are volunteers.
That's a good point as well, yeah.
And these people are exhausted. They have, a lot of them won't be able to respond to this one because they haven't got the physical energy to do it anymore. We don't have the government infrastructure in place to deal with these disasters.
I was going to say, because I was going to say, and by the way, if you just joined us, I'm talking with Adam Devlin in Queensland. I'm Henry in Sydney for Bondi Tunes International. I wonder about the government involvement in firefighting and bushfires because there are these people who do it for nothing. Is the government, federal or state, not stepping up to the plate in terms of dealing with this on a professional level with professional firefighters?
Look, there are some professional firefighters in there, absolutely.
Of course.
But the vast majority of the feet on the ground fighting the fire, the vast majority of those people are volunteers.
Right. But why? Now, I'm just wondering why I just find it weird that...
Why the volunteers? Why we don't have a national response team funded by the government?
Yeah.
It's a very good question. It's because, it's as simple as this, Henry. People enjoy volunteering for this. I know that enjoys an odd word to use here, but...
No, they do. It's a big deal, and especially if people who are retired, that they love... helping the community. There are nice people out there.
Yeah, and it goes back historically. There's been bushfires in Australia for centuries before us white men got here.
Yeah.
So when this country was invaded, settled, whatever you want to call it, by the UK, there were right from day one, they had to put up with, I mean, they landed in Botany Bay on the 26th of January, right in the guts of the bushfire season. So right from pretty much day one, these British and Irish predominantly, a few other nationalities in there, of the first fleets, they needed to learn how to fight an Australian bushfire pretty much instantly. And that, and of course, at that stage, it was always done by volunteers because there wasn't a government as such. And so it just grew, it developed, as Australia developed, that this sort of thing about volunteers being our bushfire brigade and our disaster relief people, it's just sort of become part of our national DNA.
Exactly, and it's an historical thing, and you've segued so nicely into this subject, and I just want to let our listeners know, in Europe and North America, on the 26th of January, 1788, Captain Arthur Phillip raised the flag of Great Britain and proclaimed a colonial outpost at Warrain, which is Sydney Cove, on the sovereign lands of the Gadigal peoples of Eora Nation. Now, we celebrate...
And by the way...
Sorry, yes. Say that again, because I don't think our listeners heard that.
And of course, that nation that the British came to, they have never ceded sovereignty. So the indigenous nation that was based in Sydney Harbour have never ceded authority to the British government or the Australian government to take over their land. So in many regards, depending on which way you look at it, this is stolen land.
Yeah, and this is celebrated on the 26th of January, which is, we're recording on Tuesday, that's this coming Friday. There is a section of the community that calls it Australia Day, and there's another section of the community that calls it Invasion Day.
Yes.
This is a can of worms we're about to open here. what are your thoughts? What I know that you don't want it to be on the 26th, so tell us why.
Okay. Australia Day, or a national day for any country, is meant to be and should be a coming together of the peoples of that nation in celebration of the country that they call home. That is what a national day should be all about.
Mm.
January 26 will never be that for the vast majority of our Indigenous people, and for an increasing number of the non-Indigenous in this country, simply refuse to celebrate a national day on what the Indigenous people of this country consider the day that their country was stolen off them.
Mm.
Now, a lot of people say, but it's a tradition, you know, we can't go changing these traditions, they mean things. Just a couple of facts on that. July 30th, the 28th of July, the 1st of December, the 1st of June, the 28th of December and the 26th of January are just some of the days in the past that Australia has celebrated Australia Day on.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yes, and it's only been since 1994, 30 years ago, that it's been a national, a gazetted national day and public holiday. The Australia Day public holiday is only 30 years old. So people who say we can't change it because of tradition simply don't know what they're talking about. It's, you know, there's been many more years where it, 26th of January wasn't Australia Day than it has been. So changing the date will have a couple of things, will mean a couple of things to Australia. If we change the date from January 26, we could then have a date that all of Australians could celebrate the day on.
I just want to...
And then January...
I was just going to say, I just want to quote Wikipedia on this for our international audience. Since 26th of January 1788, the way of life for Australia's First Nations people has continually been under threat, with families and communities forced to fight to protect their country, people, culture and history. It wasn't until 1935 that the term Australia Day was widely adopted, and it has only been celebrated as a national public holiday on that date since 1994, with numerous other dates, as you mentioned, Adam Devlin, being celebrated in the past. What's going to happen here? Is anything going to happen?
Well, this year we've seen a fair bit of ridiculous noise in the press because a number of retailers have decided not to sell Australia Day memorabilia.
Yes.
We've had Woolworths, our biggest supermarket chain in the country, is not stocking Australia Day memorabilia this year. Aldi, the German supermarket giant who's in Australia, is not doing it as well. There's a number of other store chains have also said they're not doing it. A significant number of councils now, I believe it's around 80 councils around the country, have stopped doing citizenship presentations on Australia Day because of the controversial nature of that day. So they're doing it either a few days before or a few days after the 26th of January now. So, and there's about 40% at the last poll I saw, there's about 40% of Australians who, whilst may not all be in favour of changing the date, certainly do not object to the date changing.
But so, there are people who do object.
Oh, absolutely there are.
Are they kind of, I was going to say loyalists or royalists or, you know, tied to the old British Empire?
No, they tend to be more of your right-wing leaning young groups of people. They tend to be bogans, is a word that comes to mind.
Yes.
They like to, you know, wave plastic Australian flags made in China and plastic hats made in China and beach towels made in China. Yeah. And they think that if they cover themselves and their cars and their houses in these cheap plastic crap from China, that somehow it means they're more proud to be Australian than people who don't do that. It's, of course, complete jingoism and ridiculous.
Mm.
But these people exist in our community. And so these people think, and I've had many conversations with some of these people actually think that changing the date is disrespectful to their forefathers and the diggers, diggers for people overseas is the colloquial term for Australian Army fighters, soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they think changing the date from Jan 26 is disrespectful to the diggers who fought in World War I and World War II. Australia Day didn't exist at that point, so it can't be disrespectful to those people. Anzac Day is there. National day of respect, not January 26th. So
yes, and just for our listeners, just explain Anzac Day.
Anzac Day. Anzac stands for the Australian and New Zealand Army Corps, and it came out of the battalions of soldiers who landed at Gallipoli in 1914, and
to, it was the 14 to 18 World War in Turkey,
and we were massively defeated by Turkey, and we had a massive loss of lives of Australian and New Zealand soldiers. Now, over the years after that, it was determined that England sent Australia and New Zealand into that battle because they knew they couldn't win it. They didn't want to lose their British soldiers, so they sacrificed Australian and New Zealand soldiers.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, yep. And so anyway, over the years, that has morphed into Anzac Day on the 26th of April. And that is almost a revered, well, I think it's even more revered now than Australia Day is. So it really is more of a national day than Australia Day for me and for most Australians.
Okay. Now, Adam, before we move on and we'll get back to Australia Day in a second, I just want to get an audio grab of what Aboriginal people think and how they responded to Australia Day. Take a listen.
Australia Day. It's an interesting one.
Australia Day. What is Australia Day?
Don't you mean Invasion Day?
It means different things to different people. For us, it means survival.
Invasion Day. Our survival.
Survival Day.
And celebrations of survival of one of the oldest cultures, if not the oldest culture on Earth.
Racism.
I think a joke.
It's really sad.
My gut drops.
The fact that they celebrate that day that we lost all that we had. Yeah, pisses me off.
It's insensitive to say the least.
An offence.
It's everything at once.
Brotherhood, sisterhood, clan, mob, strength.
It does bring up a lot of hurt, a lot of heartache.
It's like somebody that comes into your house, does horrible things to your family, and they're like, oh, dude, we're going to like have like a party and have a barbecue and listen to Triple J. Yeah, and we're going to put it on the date we turned up. And you're like, that's kind of sadistic, man. Like, why would you do that?
People celebrating the day that your people got slaughtered and invaded, and the day that caused all that destruction and all that suffering to very peaceful people.
For a lot of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islanders, it's a day of mourning.
It's the day that marks the beginning of the massacres.
It's celebrating rape, it's celebrating murders.
I celebrate so many things about being here, about how beautiful this country is. But at the same time, there's a dark and disconnected culture.
I think that our country is a great country and it's beautiful and there are a lot of opportunities here. I feel that celebrating Australia Day on the 26th of January is wrong. That doesn't make any sense.
The 1st of January 1901 was when the states federated to become a country. It was loosely called Australia before then. It became official. This was now the nation called Australia, the Commonwealth of Australia. That should be Australia Day.
If it's truly a celebration of what we are as a nation, then we need to include the First Nations of this country.
A day that we could all celebrate.
I'll help you celebrate it if you like.
We're quite inclusive people, so we just want to be included as well.
Maybe you should celebrate Australia as a whole and as it was before, and think about who's included in that culture when you're celebrating.
Okay, you know what's interesting about this, Adam, is that there's mixed messages from Aboriginal people. Some of them are quite happy to go with Australia Day on the 26th.
Absolutely. And I don't think anyone has ever said that the Indigenous population has a uniform voice on this. They don't.
It's a bit like no group.
Like the white Australians don't have a uniform opinion on anything either. So why would we expect the Indigenous to?
I mean, this goes in line with the fact that we had the yes-no referendum recently.
The voice referendum last year, yeah.
And of course...
There were some Indigenous people who were voting...
That's right, yeah.
No to the voice for Parliament for the Indigenous people. So, you know, that you will get people throwing that argument up saying, well, not all of the Indigenous hate the day, so why change it? Well, you know, all of the credible polling says that the vast majority of the Indigenous population don't want our National Day on the 26th of January.
Don't you
and
think
it's... And there's also a growing proportion of white Australians who don't want it there as well. And it's growing each year, so just change the date.
Well, you just mentioned major companies, major supermarkets and major companies in general are getting on top of this and they're going, I mean, that's a risky thing for them to do, Adam, isn't it? Because they might lose customers.
They might lose customers, and let's not forget, and for those people overseas... our opposition leader, the Peter Dutton, as I now call him, based on the Donald.
I never know if he's potato head or egg head. I always get that mixed up.
Egghead. He when Woolworths came out and said they won't be stocking Australia Day, specific Australia Day memorabilia this year, he called for a national boycott of Woolworths.
Jesus.
Now, boycotting Woolworths, if that was done, if Australia followed what he asked us to do, that would have put 200,000 people out of work.
Yeah, that's disgraceful.
So, you know, and he's our alternative
opposition leader, isn't he? Yeah, yeah.
He is our opposition leader. He's Australia's Donald Trump.
That's a scary thought.
In many ways.
So where are we going? I mean, I've asked you this already, but I'm just wondering, will it be in our lifetimes before this date has changed? And can there be some kind of legal, can there be a parliamentary proper discussion on this?
Yes, there can. There doesn't need to be a sort of a referendum or a plebiscite or anything like that to do this. It's a simple act of parliament. And so all it will take is for the sitting government of the day to say, this is enough. The distractions that this date is causing is taking away from what the day is meant to be, and they will change it.
You sound very positive about this.
Oh, I'm absolutely certain it will happen. And Henry, I would go so far as to say I reckon it will happen within the next decade.
That's fair enough.
The grounds for people against this date being our national day is growing every year, and it will get to a point where you'll have no corporate businesses supporting it. the number of people turning up to official events will dwindle.
Yeah, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. Yeah.
And so once the government realizes that the people of the country aren't behind the state, they will, of course, change it.
They'll be forced to.
And they'll be forced to, absolutely. Mm. And there will be 5 minutes of the most outrageous noise from the Liberal Party and the conservative side of Australian society. And that will last for 5 minutes, and then it will go away, and it will never be mentioned again.
Let me ask you, Adam Devlin in Queensland, what do you do on Australia Day?
Well, I certainly don't have
a big
hats or
barbecue
and songs and things. No, I don't celebrate the day at all.
Because we have a public holiday, obviously.
We do. It is a public holiday, and it's this year we've got nothing planned. In previous years, we have had a couple of people over for a barbecue in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But it's never an Australia Day barbecue. It's simply taking advantage of a public holiday
to
catch up with some friends.
As so many people do.
We never once stop and think about Australia and what it means to us and what this day means to us. That's completely irrelevant to us. It's just a bunch of friends catching up on a day off work. And we'll take that and enjoy it every year. Thank you very much.
And I think a lot of people are in the same boat. They think, oh, it's a day off work, you know, which is
This year it's on a Friday, so it's a long weekend. We've got a 3-day weekend, so a lot of people will go travelling. Mm-hmm. People usually go north, but with cyclones and monsoons, in just about every direction you look north, I think a lot of people may go south this year.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, Adam, it's always great to talk to you. Thank you for joining me here on Bud Light Tunes.
Can I say one very quick thing before we go?
Oh, you can say it. You can talk for as long as you like. I don't mind.
I had the pleasure this morning of watching an anti-Trump ad out of the Biden camp in America.
Yeah.
For TV. And I can tell you that this is one of the most effective political ads I've seen out of America in quite a while. It is Donald Trump, clips of Donald Trump at his rallies.
I've seen it,
and it's trips of Nikki Haley, his only other candidate for the nomination in the Republican Party. And it shows things like Donald Trump saying he won the election against Obama. He never stood for an election against Obama. It was Hillary Clinton.
He got it wrong.
He said that he offered Nikki Haley 10,000 soldiers during the January 6th riots on the Capitol, and that she turned him down. He was actually referring there to Nancy Pelosi, who was a Democrat.
So he made that mistake, and she wasn't even there.
Nikki Haley was his UN ambassador, Trump's ambassador to the UN at the time, so she wasn't even in the country.
I know,
She wasn't in office, so he's just got very confused by that. He also said just recently that Joe Biden will lead America into World War II.
World War II.
That happened in the 1940s. So, the Republican Party have been making lots of comments about Joe Biden not being capable because of his age to run the country. I was so thrilled when I saw this ad out of the Biden camp. And all I had to do, the only words from Joe Biden at this was at the end of it, and he said, I'm Joe Biden and I support and I authorize this message.
Yeah, beautifully crafted ad, I must say.
And beautiful. So if they can keep doing that, I think they've got a real chance of denting Trump's ascension to the Republican nomination.
And I wanted to, I'm glad that you've talked about this because we're not talking to we've got three North American correspondents and they're not on the air this week, so Adam is stepping in for them. America's a funny place because they start doing their campaigns a year before the actual election, which is always in November. And of course, then you've got the 2 years into it. I don't know what it's called. I can't remember.
The midterms.
And it's like it never ends over there, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's so just
basically
ridiculous.
One election and start campaigning for the next one. It's insane.
It is insane.
But yeah,
I know that you love going to America. You've been to New York, you've been to Vegas, you've been to Los Angeles, I think, I don't know. But you've been to America a few times. Do you like America to visit?
Absolutely. Well, let me
But you would live in New York, okay?
I love New York and I love Los Angeles and California, so I would live in either of those places. I don't know if I would live anywhere else in America, particularly at this point, and considering what's
not Iowa, not Iowa. Because they had a little election there, and Trump won that big time.
Yeah, which was no one can be surprised by that.
No.
The other thing that Trump said just recently, he said that he had no inflation under his government. Mm-hmm. And he had the strongest economy of any country in the world ever when he was president. Now, both of those things are absolute
rubbish,
certified lies.
His rusted on supporters don't care what he says. He can shoot a guy down in New York on the street. You know, who are these people? Who are they?
It's interesting you bring that up because I've done a lot of research recently. I'm becoming a little bit obsessed with the upcoming American election, I have to say.
Oh, good.
Just because it's so important that Trump does not get his hands back onto the keys.
And important internationally as well, Adam, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. More important internationally than domestically. And also, if you look at all of the things that Trump is accusing Biden of or going to do, they are, at every time I've heard him accuse Biden of something, you know that it's stuff that Trump has done. Every time you hear Trump criticize Biden or accuse him of planning to do something in the future, you know that Trump's planning to do that himself. That's his personality type. So if you want to know what a second Trump presidency would look like, just look at everything he's accusing Joe Biden of either doing or being, and that's exactly what the Trump presidency will do.
Interesting way to look at that.
Let me just dig into these people who are saying, these rusted-on voters. Did a fair bit of research just recently online looking into these polls that give us this data, and there's about 25% of his supporters are saying, and this isn't getting reported in America, by the way, by the
of course,
the
they've got
right-wing Fox media network.
Introverted media,
About 25% of his rusted-on supporters are saying if he's convicted of one of these 92 cases that he's up on, 92 case court visits he's got coming up in the next 12 months. Yeah. If he gets convicted on any one of those, they will walk away from him. Now, you've already got three states that have so far said that they will not allow him to be on the ballot for president. So there's three states he won't win.
They are Democratic states, in all fairness, though, aren't they?
Absolutely, they are. But if and they are, Trump is appealing those. But if he loses those appeals, you will see other states do the same thing. So if he's convicted of something, and
it'll be a domino effect, right?
Absolutely. I've listened to a lot of lawyers, some of them ex-Trump lawyers themselves, saying that it is physically and logically impossible for him to not be charged on at least one of these cases, and they're expecting five or six of them for him to be found guilty on. If that happens and these people do what they have indicated and they walk away from him, that's a quarter of his support gone instantly. You then have a number of states where he won't be able to run. He won't be on the ballot, so he won't be able to win those states. A large proportion of Republicans are saying, we are proud Republicans, but we can't vote for Trump, so we just won't turn at all and vote on the day. And the Democrats are doing an excellent job of getting people to register to vote. So even if Trump does win the nomination, and it's looking like he may, Nikki Haley, I don't think
she's too far behind. You know, Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, has bailed out. And what I find really funny, Adam, is with American elections is they all support each other until, you know, he was saying how great Trump was. And now that he's pulled out, I'm sorry, he was knocking the hell out of Trump while he was going for his position as leader. And now that he's bailed out, he's endorsing him. You know, this is bullshit.
Don't forget that Donald Trump used to call him Ron DeSanctimonious.
He still does. He still does. Well,
not yesterday. Yesterday he praised him. Yesterday he said he's a good man. Yesterday
is that right? Yesterday he
sang his praises. Yeah.
How very generous of him.
Here's a tip. Mm-hmm. Do not be surprised if between now and Trump getting the nomination, if Trump gets the nomination, that Ron DeSantis is announced as a position within Trump's cabinet.
Yes, that's interesting. And he's almost as dangerous as Trump.
He is, well, yes. In fact, the only difference between them is that Trump is in cognitive decline. Which is obvious by his rambling statements that he makes at his rallies.
He has made so many mistakes.
He has, absolutely. Every rally is just, you know, it's difficult to not just sit there laughing at him when I watch it because of the ridiculous things coming out of his mouth. Mm. But, you know, Trump hasn't said who his vice president's going to be.
Yeah,
Why did Ron DeSantis quit after one primary?
He made a phone call to Mr. DeSantis. Methinks.
So I've got no evidence to back this up. I'm just adding two and two and coming up with something.
Yeah, for sure. And I just, it's interesting. You know, with the US elections, we have to pay attention. Countries like Britain and Australia and other first world countries that do a lot of trade and stuff with America, and there's a lot of political intertwining going on, particularly between Britain, Australia and America, because we always do what America says. We just bend over and take it.
And so, there's also a lot of military links as well. Don't forget those.
Of course, and a lot of money is involved in all that stuff as well. Especially you mentioned submarines earlier in our broadcast, which switched from France to America. Go figure.
And we're spending something close to $400 billion on submarines that are already outdated. And we won't have them until the mid-1930s. 2030s, sorry.
They can't land at on our ports. I mean, it's so ridiculous. But the reason I'm mentioning this, Adam, is because it does make a big difference to us what happens in this election. And I'm wondering, you know, how Australia is so involved. What do we do with America? What are the main things? And we've just mentioned arms for a start. Yeah. Any good things we're doing?
One of the first things that we could do, and we have just recently done this, and this is a huge applause for Anthony Albanese, our current Prime Minister. And this is the first time in my living memory that I can recall this has happened. America requested that we send some Navy ships to the Middle East to help with the Israel-Palestinian situation at the moment, and Australia refused to do so.
Yes. That's interesting, isn't it? It's a telling thing.
That is. Yes. Anthony Albanese has made a lot of mistakes in his time he's been Prime Minister, in my opinion.
I agree.
This is one of the things he got.
But Adam, lest we forget that at the beginning of this Israel, the carnage between Gaza Strip and Israel, our government officially supported Israel going in there to the Gaza Strip. That happened, and Albanese said, you know,
And we still officially do support that action.
Yes.
We haven't yet called for a ceasefire in this country.
No. Has Britain?
And I'm not aware if Britain has another.
I don't think they have, no.
No. And so for Albanese to then turn around and refuse the request of
good
Navy
for him.
Ships, that shows me that we can, when we need to, say to America, actually, this is not our battle and it's not in our interest to be part of it. So, on your own, off you go.
Yeah.
We'll stay at home. Thanks.
Well, let's see how this turns out. That war is not going to end anytime soon. And there's a lot of other problems going on. It's causing problems in the Middle East. I've lived there in 83.
I'm more concerned by this dispute than I am with the Russia-Ukraine one. There's so many nations. Israel is such a contentious place, and so many countries.
I was going to say volatile politically, you know.
Yes, absolutely, and you know, it just takes a bomb to land on the wrong street in somewhere, on the wrong, you know, and this could explode internationally. Yeah, it's a tinderbox, and there are sparks flying around all over the place. So, you know, it's incredibly volatile, as you just said, and I just hope that's, I don't think it will be, but I hope and pray that this is well over and sorted by the time the American election comes around in November, because if that's still going on and it gets wrapped up into the election campaign with Trump campaigning, he's going to say some outrageous and ridiculously false things that people will take as truth.
And you've got to remember that the Jewish presence in America is very, very big. Like they're involved in everything, especially the film industry, actually. And
the finance industry. Don't forget that the American economy is essentially run by the Jews.
Yes, a bit like Bondi Beach.
Yes.
It really is. It really is. And they're very nice people, don't get me wrong.
Absolutely.
We had to go.
They run a good economy. That's their strength, you know.
And they're damn good at it. Let's face it. They're damn good at it. Adam Devlin, thank you so much for joining me. I got to let you go.
Yes.
But thank you for taking over our American conversation this week, because our correspondents aren't here this week. Thank you so much, Adam.
An absolute pleasure, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners as well.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
The cannonballs fly before they're forever banned. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
How many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? How many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see?
Take till he knows that too many people have died.
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing.
Hello everybody, this is Henry for Bondi Tunes International. You're listening to our two-hour weekly chat show,
But hey, we also have a music show called Bondi Tunes Plus, music from the 40s to the 90s, airing on this station. It's a big random party that spans five decades, from Nat King Cole to the Backstreet Boys, and everything else in between. It's a lot of fun, so make sure you check your station's schedule and look out for the Bondi Tunes Plus show. I'm currently in the 40s, so I'm off to the dance hall. See ya.
Double-O-Seven, licensed to sing. The next Bond film in 1965 was the only one of the original ones not produced by Harry Saltzman and Kirby Broccoli. It was associated with a legal dispute in 1961 when former Ian Fleming collaborators Kevin McClory and Jack Whittingham sued him shortly after the 1961 publication of the novel, claiming he based it upon the screenplay that the trio had earlier written in a failed cinematic translation of James Bond. The lawsuit was settled out of court, and the Bond film producers, fearing a rival McClory film, allowed him to retain certain screen rights to the novel's story, plot, and characters, and for McClory to receive sole producer credit on the film. But all the other original elements of the series were there. Once again, the artist singing the title song was Welch, but this time it was Tom Jones. The original main title theme to Thunderball was titled Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was written by John Barry and Leslie Bricusse. The title was taken from an Italian journalist who in 1962 dubbed Agent 007 as Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Barry had thought he couldn't write a song about a vague Thunderball term or the film story, so his song was a description of the character James Bond. The song was originally recorded by Shirley Bassey, but when there were problems with Bassey's singing, it was later re-recorded by Dionne Warwick and featured a longer instrumental opening designed so the lyrics would not be heard until after the title Thunderball appeared in Morris Binder's title design. The song was removed from the title credits after United Artists requested that the theme song contain the film's title in its lyrics. When it was planned to use the Warwick version in the end titles, Shirley Bassey sued the producers, with the result that neither version was heard in the film. So Barry teamed up with lyricist Don Black and wrote Thunderball in a rush. Tom Jones, who sang the new theme song, fainted in the recording booth after singing the song's final high note. Jones said of that final note, "I closed my eyes and I held the note for so long, when I opened my eyes, the room was spinning." A minor hit in 1966, peaking at number 35 in the UK charts, but better in the US, reaching number 8.
She always runs while others walk. He asks, talk. He looks at this world and wants it all. So he strikes like thunderbolt. He knows the meaning success. His needs are more, so he gives less. They call him the winner who takes all, and he strikes like thunder. Any woman he wants, he'll get. He will break any heart without regret. asking are all gone. His fight goes on, and but he thinks that the fight is worth it all. So he strikes like thunder.
And thank you so much for joining us here on Bondi Tunes International for our two-hour weekly chat show. My name's Henry. I live on Bondi Beach. A word about our website, bonditunes.com, where you can hear all our shows on demand. See you next week. Bye-bye. L-O-V-E.
sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.